All right, thank you very much. I'd like to welcome everybody back to school. It's back to school time. I'm a bit of a disaster scientist, I guess that is, disaster scientist. So how many of you have seen or heard about landslides in the past? Can I show of hands? Right. So you may remember just down the road a ways in 2014, there was the West Salt Creek slide near Grand Junction. It's a pretty impressive slide, moved a few miles, big mass of material moving at about 50 miles per hour down a 10 degree slope, so you know something that's angled like this, fast moving blocks of boulders. It's hosted in shale. I prefer to think of shale as Mudd's older, slightly drunk, stressed out uncle. And when we see landslides like this, we try to figure out what caused them and who's at risk. And in this one, it was triggered by intense rainfall. And so we learned a little bit about it. As the rainfall happens, a lot of people say, oh yeah, water's a lubricant and it slides better. Well, you're wrong. That's not why it works. It has to do with stresses and pressures, and it reduces the normal force and allows things less friction to slide. It's not a lubricant though. All right, so that's a pretty impressive slide, but not anything that I studied. So in 1929, if we step back 90 years, there was a Grand Banks landslide in the Atlantic Ocean on the east coast of North America. The slide was bigger. It moved at about 60 or 70 miles per hour, but this time it moved on a 1 degree slope. So essentially a flat surface. We have thousands of cubic kilometers of mud moving at 60 miles per hour. And it's mud, and I love mud. I'll come back to that. I've always loved it, always will. So this was interesting because it was in the ocean, we couldn't see it. But we knew it happened because it ripped up a series of transatlantic cables that connected communications from North America to Europe. In 1929, that was a big deal. Today, Europe might appreciate if we cut off that communication. So, not only was it sort of an interesting earth science event, it generated this large tsunami and ended up killing about 27 people. So these are deadly events. There are other ones in historic past that have killed thousands of people. And I sort of imagine, you know, what it was like back then. It was probably like a pretty bad horror movie. So people were on the phone chatting with their relatives in Poland or wherever, and all of a sudden the communications were cut off. Like in a bad horror movie, you go outside to see what happens. That's not a good idea. It never ends well. So if you lose your phone connection, stay inside. But now we have to ask ourselves, what caused this landslide? Anyone?
Water.
Well, it's underwater, so water might play a role, but rain doesn't help because it doesn't see the rain when you're underwater. So we're trying to figure out what causes these things, why they're so dangerous. That's what I do. So I try to look at who is at risk and when are they at risk. And it's not us sitting here in the Science Museum, but there are 3 billion people that live in coastal communities around the world, and they are at risk. So that's sort of the motivation for me. So first we have to get past a little bit of semantics. They're called landslides. But they don't happen on land, they happen underwater. So it's a bit of a misnomer, but I'm okay with that, we're gonna move on, accept it. Some people, a few years ago, tried to make a switch in terminology and switch it to something called submarine mass movements. It doesn't roll off the tongue very well. Maybe a little bit better than Baker Hughes, whatever that Felix said, Borehole geophysics and petrophysics. And it also sort of conjures up some images that I'd rather not think about. Oh my gosh, we're running out. So I started playing with mud early in my life. I managed to hone these skills to get a doctorate in mud squeezing. And now I do science based on that. Yes, I look at mud. It's important for everything. Things that we do in science, things that we eat. It's in McDonald's milkshakes, for those who don't know. I prefer the Shamrock variety if you're buying drinks later. All right. Back to landslides. We actually don't see these happen. With the exception of two scuba divers who were in the wrong place at the right time, we've never observed one happen. So we have to look at their deposits. And they move fast, thousands of kilometers at airplane speeds. So I solved them with borehole geophysics and core data. Some people call it a well. I prefer to distance myself from the terminology well after the deep water horizon disaster. So what is a borehole other than this round thing on my mouth, my face? It's a 10-inch hole that we drill and we pull samples back up to the surface. And then I take smaller samples out of that, 2.5-inch samples the size of hockey pucks, and I bring them back and I interrogate the mud to see what it's thinking. What makes you slide? When will you fail again? I wish I could get these answers, but we measure real rock properties in the lab. We take the samples back and we squeeze them. Yes, squeezing mud is a thing. It's half art, half science. Not too fast, not too slow. You have to do it just right. Squeezing gives me all of the information I need. And it gives me a little bit of a warm, fuzzy feeling too sometimes. Does it act like a water balloon? When I squeeze it, does it pop? That's a landslide. When I squeeze it and it breaks, that's a landslide. If the pressure gets too high. Well, that pressure then provides a nice water pressure, frictionless surface, which lets them go so fast. We've learned that in the last 10 years. Or does it behave like a sponge? And I squeeze it and the water just comes out. So we try to figure out when does the failure happen. It all comes down to how much pressure and how quickly, just like life. But we have these huge landslides in the ocean. We drill these 10-inch boreholes, and then we take 2-inch samples out of them and form mud hockey pucks. Now, how do I learn from this? Well, some people would call it informed extrapolation. I prefer to call it arm waving, scientific arm waving. I take the lab data, I take the borehole data, and I build numerical mud castles on the computer. And then I can simulate a disaster. So no one gets hurt, but we can learn things about it. And we've successfully done this for Japan, Norway, New Jersey, and the Gulf of Mexico to help do better risk assessment. Still trying to decide if we should share the information with New Jersey. But we can't see these things happen. That's the big thing that's missing yet. We can't see them. So I've taken some inspiration from NPR's Tiny Desk Concerts. I'm doing tiny desk landslides. We take fish tanks. We can control all the parameters. We take the fish out first. No fish are hurt. We may have injured a few plastic scuba divers. And we can actually watch the landslides happen and these little tsunamis. But we're learning a lot. We're learning tons, actually. We can make catastrophic landslides that generate tsunamis, or we can make these little creepy ones that just move a little bit, not too far, not too fast. Well, I don't have all the answers yet. I promise you one thing. I live in Colorado for a reason. Thank you very much.